And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Well, when I was a kid growing up in New Bedford, Massachusetts, the Whaling City, there was a park in New Bedford called Buttonwood Park that I was always told was an Olmsted Park. I wasn't really sure what that meant, but Buttonwood Park was a nice place to play as a kid. It turns out that Buttonwood Park was actually developed in the 1800s by the Olmsted Company. But it turns out that this a gentleman named Frederick Law Olmsted was a visionary landscape architect. He defined the term in the mid-1800s. And this guy, Frederick Law Olmsted, among other things, designed Central Park in New York. And round about the 1870s or so, Boston, somehow related to Boston. This guy had been around. He started the Nation magazine, Frederick Law Olmsted. The Nation magazine, you can still look up online today. He founded it, right? Anyway, Frederick Law Olmsted was contracted to develop a system of parks that would encircle the city of Boston with a plan to be designed in the 1870s. That ring of parks is currently known as something called the Emerald Necklace. And you may be familiar with at least parts of the Emerald Necklace if you've ever been to, not Fenway Park so much, but the Fens, which is a nice grassy area near Fenway Park. Or you've driven along the Jamaica Way and seen the green grassy stuff in that part of town. Or if you've ever been to Franklin Park in Boston, those are all parts of this Emerald Necklace that Frederick Law Olmsted designed and had built between 1870 and 1900 or so. Fascinating history, lots of stuff behind it. But here we are, fast forward 120 years, we're in the 2020s, and those parks are still around, giving us some benefits. They weren't completed as was originally envisioned, but they're still there, they're still beautiful, they're still providing human enrichment. Recently, somebody decided to take a hike to all of the Emerald Necklace and see what he saw. And we are thrilled to have with us a gentleman named Miles Howard, who is a journalist and travel author who works at the nexus of urban living and outdoor recreation. And he has taken a hike through the Emerald Necklace. Miles, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you, Ted. I'm thrilled to be here talking about this. I feel like the Emerald Necklace and urban hiking in general is the next big thing waiting to hit the outdoor rec scene that has gotten so huge during the pandemic. So thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad to have. So I just told an incomplete story about Frederick Law Olmsted and the Emerald Necklace. Did I get anything wrong there?
You covered it pretty well, Ted. I mean, I would have gone on a similar path with summing up his trajectory and how he went from being a journalist to being responsible for many of the most iconic parks we see in northeastern cities in the U.S. And just the very idea of the connective greenway that serves as an artery between urban neighborhoods. And, I'd heard of Olmsted offhand growing up, partly because going to the parks in Boston, whether it was the Common, Jamaica Pond, or the Fenway, was just so endemic to living here. And it wasn't until recently when I began, really savoring the greenways that connect these spaces, when I really began to appreciate the profundity of what he did and what he catalyzed.
So tell me, what did you do? I understand that you, over the past month or so, as the weather has gotten better here in Boston, undertook to hike the length of this Emerald Necklace, which is literally a necklace. It's a ring of parks that are interconnected. You can get from one to the next pretty much without too much concrete, I guess I would say. And you can hike for a long way. Is that fair? I mean, did you do that?
Yeah, well, the Emerald Necklace, as you just described it, is something that I have been walking for the last 10 years here and there, ever since I started living and working in Boston full time. And for a while, I just thought about it as, oh, it's this cool, unique, you know, trail of parks. And I would bring friends there when they were visiting to sort of orient them to Boston and also just get in a great walk for talking and catching up. But, you know, the reason I decided to hike the entire thing more recently was because during the pandemic, I took to taking very long walks around Boston, well upwards of 7 miles sometimes. You know, and often I would take these strolls through, you know, industrial spaces or, you know, neighborhoods that had kind of a unique atmosphere at twilight. But, you know, it was spring, the buds were blooming, and just the atmosphere with vaccinations increasing was really good. So I decided, you know what, this is a great time to, you know, walk the whole necklace again. I haven't done it for a while. And now I can, you know, easily take the T back to my starting point now that things feel a little bit safer. So, yeah, that was what got me out the door about 3 weeks ago. I started at Franklin Park, which is about a mile's walk away from where I live in Jamaica Plain, and spent the afternoon trekking up to the common. And it was just, it was so lovely. And it made me so grateful for this baseline green space infrastructure that exists in Boston already.
So to Franklin Park, so I have a limited understanding or sort of limited amount of information about the details of the Emerald Necklace, but Franklin Park is sort of the biggest open space, right, in this Emerald Necklace. And it is for people living not in Boston, Franklin Park is kind of south and maybe a little bit west of the downtown area, not by much, right? And it's what, mile square kind of thing, square mile kind of area?
I don't have the rough specs on hand, but that sounds about right. It is definitely the largest green space in the entire necklace. And I mean, just the variety of what you find there is kind of immense. I mean, many people know the Franklin Park Zoo. There's a vast network of trails through, you know, the woods there that, you know, include like a frisbee golf course and a really nice pond where some people occasionally fish. And then, of course, there's the Devane Golf Course, too, which comprises an enormous segment of the eastern side of Franklin Park. And it's from right around there where, you know, Olmsted actually wanted to extend the Emerald Necklace even further through Dorchester up to Old Harbor. I might be jumping ahead a little bit there, but
I guess the question is, if you're going to go through the developed part, so just dear listener, there's two topics we want to get to. One is that there is the developed part of the Emerald Necklace, which is quite beautiful and is interconnected and brings you all the way where to. In the northern part of Boston, more or less on the water. But then there's also a section that goes from Franklin Park, shall we say, counterclockwise, right, across the southern part of Boston to the ocean, crosses Route 93, that never was quite completed. And it raises questions as how come, right? So, Miles, tell me, first of all, at least in brief, when you go through the developed part, what things do you see? What do you encounter? What are your experiences?
Well, as you start on Boston Common heading south, which is the trajectory a lot of people take because Boston Common is such a, you know, sort of iconic hub for congregating in the city, you start off going down the Commonwealth Avenue Mall, which is just this vast greenway flanked with huge shade trees. There are all these interesting statues featured in the middle of it. But then, you know, once you connect to the Fenway and go past, you know, the park and many of the stores there, you start to get into a riverway passage that winds past the Longwood Medical Area, where you really start to feel like you're in more of an urban forest because of the density of trees, the vastness of the trails, and just the quietude there. I mean, it's kind of incredible that it's so quiet because, in fact, there's a very busy road, the Jamaica Way, which runs parallel to that section of the walk. But somehow, the trees and the river right there seem to blot out a lot of the cacophony that you get from all those cars. And so the riverway is one of my personal favorite portions of the walk. And eventually you connect to a more sort of sun-splashed park called Olmsted Park with a rather large lagoon. And that is your connector to Jamaica Pond, which is, of course, one of the premier walking destinations for Jamaica Plain, and then there's Arnold Arboretum, and then Franklin Park right after. These destinations here are connected by roadways that are lined with trees, so it's a little bit less bucolic than what's preceded it on the riverway, but essentially, if you're going south, you know, you sort of get three big rewards as far as vast green spaces in sequence, being the pond, the Arboretum, and Franklin Park. And, I mean, a lot of people will just cap off their walk at one of those spots because you could very very happily spend an afternoon wandering around either. If I hadn't been determined to do the entire necklace walk, which is about a little over 9 miles from Franklin Park to the Common, I probably would have just brought some snacks and plunked down in one of those areas for the rest of the day.
I did not know, as Johnny Carson used to say, I did not know that stretch of Commonwealth Avenue, which is, dear listener, if you're familiar, you're probably familiar. You come out of the Common, Commonwealth Avenue is this big, broad, double lane. Well, it's a big, broad space, mostly grass in the middle with beautiful trees. And that's part of the, at least a connector in the Emerald Necklace, right? And you go down a little ways. And again, if you're a Boston familiar, you go down a little ways, you're getting into Kenmore Square near where Fenway Park is, but you take a left and all of a sudden you're into the Fens, which is this, as you say, this much more, that's interesting. I guess I hadn't, and then that keeps going. The Arnold Arboretum is owned by Harvard, right? I mean, they take care of the trees. That's where, what's his name? Thoreau was out measuring when the lilacs bloomed in the springtime, right? And then you continue on to Franklin Park. Huh. Well, that's interesting. That's fascinating. So people could do that. You could take some tech, without much.
People walk the Emerald Necklace without realizing it sometimes, or at least sections of it. I mean, the Com Ave Mall is a very popular byway for accessing that part of Boston. And, the Fens are quite popular if you're visiting the area for a baseball game or shopping. I mean, the Fens are this lovely stretch of green with sports fields, community gardens, bridges over the river that extends through there. I mean, a lot of people just wander into this stuff without realizing that it's actually interconnected to comprise this epic necklace of parks.
And so tell me, let me ask you to wax poetic a little bit. What do people take from this slice of greenness, this beautiful place in the middle of Boston, right? Where, you can go over and get a hot dog at Fenway Park, right? Which is about as urban as you can get. And literally half a mile away is the Fenway, which is much more, I don't know, a much different place. What do people look for when they go to these things?
I mean, I think that the thing that many people initially seek when they hit these places is a certain escape of serenity from just the intensity and the sort of exuberance of living in a city as big and bustling as Boston. But what I think that people often find when they enter these spaces that's more unexpected is, you meet an interesting variety of people who are out there using the Emerald Necklace too. And there is this real sense of, hey, this is not only something special and improbable in the middle of a big city, but it's a real shared treasure too. I mean, you might not be having as many impromptu conversations with strangers today because of the, understandable concerns around COVID and social distancing. But I mean, I've spent days in the Emerald Necklace running, walking with more of a mission in mind. And I've spent days just happily hanging out, people watching, having conversations and just really feeling connected to a certain kind of social current that just flows through Boston. I think that can feel a little bit more elusive than some of the other places where we spend much of our day here in the city. Yes. So I think that in some ways the Emerald Necklace is kind of one of the most naturalistic meeting places that the city has to offer right now. And I've been to a lot of U.S. cities for my job and for pleasure, and that is definitely not something to be taken for granted.
Wow, interesting. Well, there's the developed part, the part of the Frederick Law Olmsted vision that actually was brought into being. There were additional parts of Olmsted's vision which never quite got constructed for a lot of reasons but tell me, Miles, you also undertook to walk along the parts that Olmsted thought ought to be a park, but never quite made it. So tell me that story. What did you do? What did you see?
So this decision to walk the missing section was kind of inspired by when I did the first hike across the necklace. I did a Twitter thread documenting the entire thing, and so many people engaged with it and expressed, hey, I want to do this too sometime, that I decided to dig a little bit deeper into the history of the necklace to see, are there any sections that go further? Because, Franklin Park is a really cool and superlative place to end the entire thing. you know, there's still a lot of city ahead of you, you know, in surrounding neighborhoods like Dorchester and Mattapan. And after doing a little bit of research, I discovered that, in fact, the Emerald Necklace was supposed to extend through Dorchester all the way to the Old Harbor, along what many of us know as Columbia Road, which was initially planned to be a much greener and more pedestrian-friendly space than it is today. Mm-hmm. So knowing that this, you know, missing link was still walkable in some way, I thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to, you know, take a little trek down there and imagine what this could be as, you know, a fully emeraldized section of this hike? I mean, it's just, I don't know, it felt like discovering a lost world or something almost. And, you know, I figured, you know, what better way to, you know, show people what could have been than, you know, doing a similar hike and documenting mm-hmm. it the same way.
And so you, Columbia Road is now basically a two-way, two-lane either side, four-lane kind of major urban thoroughfare, right? With some green to it, but not much.
Yeah, so you've got two lanes of traffic going on each side of this median that runs down the entire road. And when you and initially, when Olmsted was planning the entire thing, he wanted this area to kind of resemble one of the other greenways that you see in other parts of the Emerald Necklace, where you have much more tree coverage, you know, more vegetated pedestrian pathways. But the median that runs down this road, which at the time back in, you know, back when the whole thing was being planned, also contained trolley tracks. That was one of the impediments to actually turning Columbia Road into a greener space. You know, that plus the density of the buildings that existed there at the time made it difficult to plant the kind of trees that you see in other parts of the Arboretum and to build better pedestrian pathways. So mm-hmm. that's part of how the entire thing fell through. The other factor, of course, is the rise of the automobile. I mean, in cities that were, you know, really embracing the idea of the greenway at the time, you know, the reorienting of planning to cars really put a damper on extending greenway projects further. And that was kind of the priority with Columbia Road, was vehicular traffic. And, you know, one of the reasons why Columbia Road is what it is today relative to the rest of the necklace.
Do you have, so this is now like a different order of question, but I mean, it is good to, I guess, recognize that we nowadays confuse Parkway with a highway. Right, the Taconic Parkway is a highway, right? Mm-hmm. VFW Parkway is a highway, right? And so to your point, the onset of automobiles sort of drove the redefinition of these things. Is that fair?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that in a weird way, Boston, while containing one of the best examples of the greenway in the urban with the Emerald Necklace, also contains an example of how cars changed everything, which is Star Drive. I mean, let's say you're in downtown Boston and you want to go walk on the Charles River, which is something that I think is iconic to Boston. I mean, to get there, you have to cross several lanes of hostile traffic on a pedestrian footbridge to this green space that is truly beautiful running along the river right there, but is ultimately, you know, divided from the city by those lanes of cars that were put in. And in fact, you know, a lot of people have proposed, you know, either taking out lanes of traffic on Star Drive or even getting rid of Star Drive altogether to turn that into a walkable space. And, you know, it's a very literal example of how highways have cleaved a lot of our green spaces in half in some cases.
And I think, again, since this is ultimately a podcast about climate, it suggests, you know, where are we going to be in 100 years if there are fewer cars, more mass transit? Would we need a Star Drive, right? And how do we get to that? I guess one of the interesting questions, if we go back to Columbia Road, right, which, I mean, if you look on a map, it is ripe for attention to make it a more pleasant place, right? But it's also a place where sort of equity issues come in, justice issues come in, are there things that could be done there that make the space greener and more pleasant, but don't turn it into something that it gets gentrified?
Well, interestingly enough, there was a framework for doing this that was part of the Boston 2024 Olympics bid. I mean, you know, there were a lot of, you know, serious issues with that bid that would have jeopardized lower income Boston residents who are often displaced by gentrification. But one of the actual good things in the plan was adding more greenery to Columbia Road. And the way that this would have happened was they would have removed the median line in the middle of the road there, planted more trees, installed protected bike lanes, and essentially fulfilled the vision that Olmsted had for the entire thing. However, you know, there were no real safeguards in the plan for ensuring that mass displacements from any resultant gentrification, you know, took place. And I mean, you know, it's also worth noting that, you know, the closest we got to doing this was attached to an Olympic bid, ultimately. I mean, as a contrast to that, over in Roxbury on Milnea Cass, there's this project underway, which is going to basically add more pedestrian space and bike lanes to the road there. But as a consequence, the city is preparing to potentially uproot the shade trees that are planted there. And there aren't a ton of shade trees in that area of Roxbury, which is 90% Black or residents of color. And I mean, you know, the fact that you've got that going on in real time right now, you know, compared to, and then you've got the Boston Olympic bid is the one vehicle that we really seriously looked at for changing the Columbia Road setup. I mean, I think that really points to, you know, the subtler ways that environmental racism can play out within cities. Now, granted, one thing that has changed since then, the Boston 3030 transportation plan does include a $17 million proposal that would basically involve a similar conversion of Columbia Road into a greener space there. But again, it does not really address any questions about, you know, what would, how would you ensure...
Right.
Oh, sorry, am I...
The integrity of the... No, you're quite right. I mean, how do you ensure the integrity of the neighborhood is maintained when this... reasonable improvements are put in, right?
Right. I mean, and in theory, you know, I guess it really depends on, you know, what type of housing stock is available in the area right now, whether that's going to change as a result of what's going on here. I mean, certainly, adding, you know, bike lanes and green spaces to a neighborhood does run the risk of, you know, driving up. I mean, it's.
Yeah. I mean, these are tough questions to address, but I mean, they are worth at least posing, right, that everyone deserves trees. Everyone deserves some grass, right? Everyone deserves to look at a squirrel once in a while. And, you know, how do we get there in a way that remains true to the vision that, as I say, everyone deserves such a thing? I mean,
I think that one factor that is probably driving this here is, I mean, I think that there is a growing consensus that everybody deserves access to green spaces, as Olmsted's original design with the Emerald Necklace, you know, basically embodied. I mean, the entire idea of connecting various neighborhoods in a city through one common greenway was very progressive for its time, and it's still pretty progressive today, really. But, I mean, one of the problems here is that we're not really pairing this plan with a more comprehensive plan for sustainable, affordable housing in Boston, for instance. And so, you know, if you have this universal green space, but a housing sector that is still largely at the whims of the private sector, you know, with market rates, I mean, it's not a complete solution. So, I mean, that's, and policy frameworks like the Green New Deal strive to address that both on a national and localized level. So that, you know, I mean, so we're nibbling at the edges of a larger and more, you know, equitable solution here to ensure that this actually that the Columbia Road project actually would be an equity based project and not just paving the road for further gentrification.
That's an interesting point and a well made point, right? That there is no, you know, there's no single solution, right? That you have to take a holistic approach to helping everyone through the transition the energy transition we're facing, right? And everything has consequence, so you have to approach it in a organic way. Wow. Well, Miles, this has been a fascinating discussion. I mean, really interesting, and I commend you for taking up. What we'll do is uh, I I will put up the thread. So we've unrolled the thread of your walk along Columbia Road. We'll put that up. What do you tweet at? If people wanted to keep an eye on your next sojourn, what would they look at?
So my Twitter handle is Miles Per Howard. That's Miles with an I, P-E-R Howard. And I'm going to be doing a lot of reporting on urban trails in Boston and hopefully around the U.S. over this coming summer and fall. I'm actually working on a story right now about the history of the urban greenway that spotlights the Emerald Necklace here. So that should be coming out in about a month from now. But yeah, Twitter is the best place to find my latest forays.
That's great. That's great. Well, look, what we'll do is you can check out the links to that kind of stuff. I'll put up some links about our friend Frederick Law Olmsted there. It's on the blog. It'll be at the blog associated with this podcast will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about the podcast, have suggestions of things we ought to talk about, send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. All right, let us know what's good about the show, what's bad about the show, what we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their smartphones using their favorite modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Miles, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. It's been very interesting.
Thanks for having me, Ted. It was great.
That's great. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.